10% of the world's trade go through it.
Be a remote, Joe Palca, VOA.
Today's Wednesday, March 24th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden sets his sights on gun violence.
We can ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines in this country once again.
Also, a report on the fight against a deadly disease, tuberculosis.
Tuberculosis killed 1.4 million people worldwide in 2019.
Plus, Myanmar military frees hundreds of imprisoned protesters. These stories and more are next. U.S. President Joe Biden is urging Congress to pass tighter gun laws following two mass shootings in Georgia and Colorado. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kuwara has the story.
Following a mass shooting in a supermarket in Boulder, Colorado, just days after deadly shootings at three spas in Atlanta, Georgia, flags are again lowered at the White House to honor the victims. On Tuesday, President Joe Biden urged Congress to immediately act to tighten America's gun laws that are among the least restrictive in the world's advanced democracies.
We can ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines in this country once again.
The 10-year assault weapons ban was passed by Congress in 1994, expired in 2004, and has not been renewed due to fierce Republican opposition. A sharp partisan divide on the issue remains, as evidenced by a Senate hearing on gun control Tuesday. Republican Senator from Texas, Ted Cruz.
What happens in this committee after every mass shooting is Democrats propose taking away guns from law-abiding citizens, because that's their political objective.
Biden also urged the Senate to pass bills aimed at expanding background checks for gun owners that Democrats recently passed in the House of Representatives. Richard Blumenthal, a Democratic senator from Connecticut.
Expanded background checks, extreme risk laws to prevent suicides, mass shootings, and hate crimes, protecting domestic violence victims, and safe storage standards. These kinds of measures are within our reach.
While Biden campaigned on ending gun violence, it is unclear how much political capital he can spend on the issue when he has other legislative priorities, including a $3 trillion infrastructure plan and immigration reform. Previous Democratic presidents have tried and failed to pass tighter gun laws, including Barack Obama, following the 2012 school shooting that killed 27 people, including 20 children. The right to own firearms is protected by the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. With a strong pro-gun lobby, it has been difficult to pass laws restricting them. Daryl Miller teaches law and the Second Amendment at Duke University.
If anything was going to make it through, I think it would be requiring universal background checks for the transfer of firearms, closing loopholes that are based on the Internet or other kinds of loopholes that exist in the current background check system.
Americans own roughly 45% of all the world's civilian firearms, about 120 guns for every 100 residents. The country also has the highest rate of gun deaths, almost 40,000 in 2019, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Patsy Widas-Kuwara, VOA News.
U.S. lawmakers are taking a new look at a decades-old law that grants U.S. presidents sweeping powers to wage war overseas. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson discusses Tuesday's hearing with International Edition's Steve Miller.
Right. Well, to go back to where we got to, you have to go back to the September 11th terrorist attack. So you're really talking about two decades that this issue has been languishing on Capitol Hill. And that's really because U.S. lawmakers have allowed it to languish. In the immediate days after those September 11th terrorist attacks, they gave the U.S. president basically very broad-ranging powers to defend the U.S. overseas. Remember, the U.S. Constitution gives them and only them the power to declare war. But by ceding that authority, they really opened up this, you know, box of trouble for the U.S. overseas and gave the president broad powers to conduct airstrikes, to broadly define who a U.S. enemy abroad was, And really, everyone at this point, both Democrat and Republican, has recognized that that's really gotten out of hand, that presidents are using that power in ways that couldn't have even been imagined in 2001 and 2002, and that they need to bring back some of that power to Capitol Hill.
You mentioned that this has been an issue that has long been languishing within the halls of Capitol Hill, and that, you know, there's bipartisan support to kind of review things and reassert their congressional power. So what did the hearing today reveal in terms of what the Democrats and the Republicans were thinking?
Well, I can say that in my years up on Capitol Hill, I have seen multiple efforts to repeal these authorizations, which in shorthand are known as AUMF. And all of those efforts have failed up until now. What's really different is the occupant of the White House. President Biden was up on Capitol Hill, as we know, for many, many decades. And he really, while he was up there, took an interest in congressional war powers and pulling some of that back from the White House. So now lawmakers have a sympathetic voice in the White House who is saying, look, I realize that the executive branch authority has grown far too large and that Congress rightly should make these really grave decisions about how to spend this much money on the military, who to send into harm's way, how to get the U.S. involved. That needs to be decided by the people who are elected by the people of the United States. And so there is this sense up on Capitol Hill that something can be worked out, some language where they repeal the old AUMF and they do a much, much narrower framework where it's very specifically defined who the president can go to war against, who he can order airstrikes against, and that if he goes over that authority, steps over that line, then Congress will have the ability to yank his funding and say, no, you are going too far. We're taking this a step back.
Now, is there any indication as to where things are going to go after Tuesday's hearing in terms of legislation being brought forward?
Right. So we know that Democratic Senator Tim Kaine, who has really been a longtime voice on this issue, has already introduced legislation in the U.S. Senate. It looks like these hearings are preparing the way for similar House legislation to go through. Obviously, that is going to be a long process, and it is going to be hard to get some Republican lawmakers on board because they say that we still need to give the president some broad-ranging authority to conduct terrorist airstrikes and to protect the United States. Democrats, of course, argue that there is nothing that is going to limit the president's power to defend the U.S. against a direct attack. We'll have to see how that argument plays out and if they can reconcile those two pieces of legislation.
That's VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson, speaking with my colleague, Steve Miller. The White House says North Korea fired short-range missiles this past weekend, just days after the sister of Kim Jong-un threatened the United States and South Korea for holding joint military exercises. The missile tests, which were confirmed by two senior Biden administration officials who briefed reporters on condition of anonymity, also come as North Korea has ignored offers from the new administration to resume negotiations. Biden downplayed the significance of the missile tests and said his administration remains committed to resuming talks with North Korea. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell told a House committee more must be done to limit the economic damage from the coronavirus pandemic. AP correspondent Ed Donahue reports.
Powell says the economy is improving.
The worst was avoided by swift and vigorous action.
But he added it's important to continue government economic support. Republicans are worried about possible tax hikes on the wealthy and corporations. Georgia Republican Barry Loudermilk says economists are predicting economic growth.
The economists also believe the package is 6.5 times larger than it needs to be.
Yellen says the country has lost 9.5 million jobs.
We have a huge problem of joblessness in our economy.
Yellen also talked about the prospect of returning the country to full employment next year. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Hundreds of people imprisoned for protesting last month's coup in Myanmar were released Wednesday in the first apparent gesture by the military to try to placate the protest movement. Witnesses outside Insein prison in Yangon saw busloads of mostly young people looking happy, with some flashing the three-fingered gesture of defiance adopted by protesters. State-run TV said a total of 628 were freed. The prisoners appear to be the hundreds of students detained in early March while demonstrating against the February 1st coup that ousted the elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi. Myanmar's Assistance Association for Political Prisoners says it has confirmed the killing of 275 people in connection with the post-coup crackdown, with additional deaths still unverified. It also says that as of Tuesday, it had verified arrests or charges against 2,812 people, of whom 2,418 remain in custody or with outstanding charges. Niger's government has vowed to do all in its power to combat terrorists after the death toll from the coordinated attacks in the country's southwest on Sunday rose to 137. David Doyle of Reuters reports.
The death toll from coordinated raids on villages in southwestern Niger on Sunday has risen to 137, the government has said, making it one of the deadliest days in recent memory for a country ravaged by Islamist violence. On Tuesday, Minister and Government spokesman Zakaria Abdurrahman said the modus operandi of terrorists and armed bandits was to target civilians.
The government will do all in its power and is firmly determined to combat terrorists until the final victory. We have already taken measures to search, find, and present to the tribunal the perpetrators of these odious, criminal, and barbaric acts.
The attack took place in the Tower region bordering Mali on Sunday afternoon. It's an example of escalating violence in Niger and the wider Sahel region, fueled by militants linked to Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, and ethnic militias. Authorities have not said who they believe is responsible, though a security source earlier blamed Islamic State, whose local affiliate is active in the zone.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. Following months of denials from both the Ethiopian and Eritrean governments, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has confirmed that Eritrean troops entered the country's northern Tigray region during the five-month-old conflict. Lisa Bernhard of Reuters has more.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has confirmed that Eritrean soldiers entered the country's northern Tigray region during a five-month-old conflict. It's the first such acknowledgement following months of denial from both the Ethiopian and Eritrean governments. Fighting erupted in Tigray in November after forces loyal to the region's then-governing party, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, attacked Ethiopian military bases. Speaking in Parliament on Tuesday, Abiy said Eritrean troops had crossed into neighboring Tigray because they were concerned they would be attacked.
The reason they show their presence is because they have a national security concern. We also informed the Eritrean government that they are being accused of wrongdoings, lootings, and other things. The Eritrean government strongly denounced these allegations and said it will take strong measures on any of its soldiers found guilty of these accusations.
Dozens of witnesses in Tigray have said Eritrean soldiers routinely killed civilians, gang-raped and tortured women, and looted civilian households and crops. Rights groups such as Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International documented the alleged killing of hundreds of civilians by Eritrean soldiers in the holy city of Aksum. Eritrea's Minister of Information was not immediately available for comment. Abiy also addressed reports of abuses by Ethiopian soldiers.
Any soldier or member of the National Defense Forces who raped our Tigrayan sisters or looted property will be held accountable by law.
The United Nations has raised concerns about atrocities committed in Tigray during the conflict. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has described acts carried out in the region as ethnic cleansing, accusations that Ethiopia has denied.
That's Lisa Bernhard of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. A massive cargo ship has turned sideways in Egypt's Suez Canal, blocking traffic in a crucial east-west waterway for global shipping. Traffic on the narrow waterway dividing continental Africa from the Sinai Peninsula stopped Tuesday after the MV Ever Given got stuck. It wasn't immediately clear what caused it to turn sideways, though authorities said winds were high in the area. Uncertainty hovered over the outcome of Israel's parliamentary election Wednesday. Both Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and sworn political rivals determined to depose him are lacking a clear path to building a government coalition. Deadlock remains a real possibility in the 120-member parliament, raising the prospects of an unprecedented fifth consecutive election. China is lashing out at the U.S. over racism, financial inequality, and the federal government's response to the coronavirus in an annual report that seeks to counter U.S. accusations of human rights abuses by China's ruling Communist Party. The document issued by China's cabinet says the U.S. in 2020 saw its own epidemic situation go out of control, accompanied by political disorder, inter-ethnic conflicts, and social division.
This is Science in a Minute.
I recently shared the sounds of Mars captured by NASA's Perseverance rover a day or so after its February 18th touchdown on the Red Planet. The space agency is sending the rover on short trips across the surface of Mars. Controllers on Earth switched on Perseverance's sensitive onboard microphone to capture the sounds as the rover rolled over the surface of Mars on a recent 27.3-meter-long trip. This is Perseverance on the move on Mars. Vandy Verma, the rover driver at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, says that people don't realize that the rover's wheels are actually made of metal. And when driving across Mars with these wheels, it's actually very noisy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Ahead of World Tuberculosis Day Wednesday, doctors are warning that progress in the global fight against the disease has been set back more than a decade by the coronavirus pandemic. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Tuberculosis killed 1.4 million people worldwide in 2019. In 2020, the coronavirus pandemic overwhelmed health services across the world. In nine countries with a high prevalence of TB, among them India, Pakistan, South Africa and Indonesia, diagnosis and treatment fell by an average of 23%, according to analysis by the Stop TB Partnership, a non-profit hosted by the United Nations in Geneva. They say the fight against TB has been set back by 12 years. Dr. Luchika Ditu is the executive director of the partnership.
It's an impact on all the work that we tried to do, but also the finances that were spent, all the efforts of everyone. We are basically back to kind of square one of that time.
Like COVID-19, tuberculosis is a disease of the lungs caused by bacteria rather than a virus. Again, Dr. Luchika Ditu.
A lot of the people that are dealing with TB, doctors, nurses, healthcare workers, providers, were shifted from TB to COVID.
Hospital wards used for TB patients were rapidly converted into emergency COVID-19 units. As countries imposed lockdowns to fight the pandemic, TB diagnosis and treatment were again hit hard.
And are the ones that have a lot of difficulties in reaching the healthcare. And one of the reasons can be distance, can be money, such as, you know, poverty and other barriers. These things were actually exacerbated on COVID.
That means many patients are badly infected by the time they reach any clinic or hospital.
That's what a lot of the clinicians are saying, that they observe now some very, very bad forms of tuberculosis that they didn't see in many years. These bad forms of TB means that mortality will be higher. It also means that transmission within the household will be bigger.
Ditu says there is an opportunity to claw back lost progress. The coronavirus pandemic has forced healthcare providers and communities closer together. By combining testing, contact tracing, and treatment for COVID and TB, both diseases can be tackled at the same time. Scientists say urgent investment is also needed in new TB vaccines and treatments. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A report by the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization and World Food Programme warns many of the more than 174 million people suffering from acute hunger across the world are likely to die without urgent international assistance. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Those most affected by acute hunger are people living in 20 so-called hotspots. Topping the list of areas where people face catastrophic levels of acute hunger are Yemen, South Sudan, and northern Nigeria. The director of the FAO office in Geneva, Dominique Bourgeon, says multiple drivers are behind the soaring rates of acute hunger. He says those factors are interlinked and mutually reinforcing in most of the hotspots.
These multiple drivers are, first, conflict or other forms of armed violence. As a result of the economic impact of COVID-19 pandemic, we also wish to flag that the economies of numerous countries in 2021 will continue to be highly vulnerable to economic shocks.
While the majority of affected countries are in Africa, the report warns acute hunger is due to rise steeply in most regions of the world. Among those most at risk are Afghanistan in Asia, Syria and Lebanon in the Middle East, and Haiti in the Caribbean. The report finds more than 34 million people already are facing emergency levels of food insecurity, with many on the brink of famine. It notes families in pockets of South Sudan and Yemen already are in danger of starvation and death. Director of the World Food Program's office in Geneva, Annalisa Conte, says people facing famine-like conditions have depleted their assets, lost their livelihoods, do not have enough to eat, and most of their children already are acutely malnourished.
Excess death due to hunger is taking place as we speak. You need to understand that beyond this point, there is starvation and widespread mortality. The window to avert a catastrophic situation, I would say of a biblical proportion, is closing fast.
The UN food agencies are calling on international donors to provide $5 billion in emergency food assistance to prevent 34 million people at risk of famine from starving to death. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Health experts in Kenya are reporting a jump in confirmed cases of COVID-19, with hospitals struggling to find enough beds for patients in need. Kenyan authorities are calling on people to protect against the virus as a third wave hits the nation. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenya has recorded more than 14,000 COVID-19 positive cases since March 1st, including more than 1,100 cases and 25 deaths on Tuesday. That's 14% of all infections since authorities announced the first case jump over a year ago. 34-year-old Gaston Wambomba's mother tested positive for COVID-19 last week. It took him 12 hours to secure a bed for his mother, who is short of breath and had to part with $1,000 before she was admitted to a hospital in Nairobi.
We are on 24/7 oxygen supply. Every single day we need to pay about 24,000. For oxygen alone, they charge 1,000 bob every hour and other medical bills and stuff. So our total comes to about 115,000 on average every single day since Tuesday last week. So she is not stable as yet. Today she's been moved to a ventilator, but we can only hope.
Speaking to journalists in Nairobi, Chief Administrative Secretary at the Ministry of Health, Rashid Aman, called out health centres charging a lot of money to treat COVID-19 patients.
This is not only unethical and callous, but unacceptable. I wish to remind our healthcare providers, both private and public, that we are in a pandemic. And this being the case, it is not the time to punish our people through some self-seeking, money-minting, opportunistic escapades.
Some Kenyan medical workers spoke of being overwhelmed with people seeking treatment in their facilities and urged people to follow health protocols to limit the virus spread. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.